Yo, what's up, baseball fam?
And welcome to episode 81 of the Diamond Duo Podcast.
This ain't just a podcast, it's a vibe.
It sure is, Past Tony. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Bauer here alongside my co-host and co-producer, Paizan of the podcast, Tony Puglisi, as we are here to explore the wide, wide world of Major League Baseball. This episode of the Diamond Duo Podcast, episode 81 of the Diamond Duo Podcast, is brought to you by a filthy, filthy, filthy intro that I promised last time that ChatGPT wrote for us. And it goes a little something like this. Hey! Oh, voice crack. Off to a great start. That's my form of being aggressive. Immediate voice crack. Great.
I was gonna say, so aggressive. Hey!
It took out my voice. Here we go. Hey, you filthy baseball fanatics! Welcome to Bases Loaded and Uncensored, the podcast that's dirtier than a stolen base slide and raunchier than a ninth inning rally. I'm your unfiltered host, ready to give you the raw, uncut, and downright dirty take on America's favorite pastime. Now, if you were expecting a clean, family-friendly show, you've stumbled onto the wrong field. We're diving deep into the urban dictionary of baseball, where the terms are as explicit as a trash talk between rivals. So grab a cold one and a pack of smokes, because we're about to get down and dirty with the bats, balls, and everything in between. Pause. From the hot, sweaty dugouts. Pause again. To the scandalous tales of baseball groupies. I'm sorry. We're exposing it all. No holds barred, baby. We'll dissect the game like a proctologist on the caffeine high, whatever the f*** that means. Covering everything from the curveballs to the bedroom antics of your favorite baseball players, like Framber Valdez. Not really. Warning, if you can't handle the heat, get out of the locker room, because things are about to get steamy. This ain't your grandma's baseball podcast, it's Bases Loaded and Uncensored, where we swing for defenses and leave no term unturned. So buckle up, you dirty diamond dwellers, because we're taking the game to a whole new level. Let the explicit innings begin. So how do you think I did, Tony? As I was battling through coughing, through a coughing fit, and f***ing trying to laugh my ass off when I read this, or dissect the game like a proctologist on the caffeine high.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a lot of credit for that one. You got through that way better than I would have. I would have laughed before I even got to the word. You didn't last that way with, what was it? What got you? Baseball groupies? Was that it?
Yes, because who the what the fuck is a baseball groupie?
I don't want to know. But I'll give you this. You bounce back after screwing up the first word twice very well. And now I think we've officially scared away our audiences looking for a family-friendly show. So you probably accomplished our goal.
Ah. That's always been my goal. I'm just kidding. It's never been my goal. But I think the trick with that one is I knew what I was going to read 2 weeks ago. So I had enough time to mentally prepare for it. Then I forgot about it. And then when we were texting each other tonight, December 4th, by the way. Hello again, everybody. When we were texting about the show beforehand, I was like, oh, damn, we have this intro, don't we? So then I looked back at it and I'm like, ooh, do I really want to add 10 minutes to the episode by laughing my ass off through this? I think I just had to, like, go boom, right at it, like, one take, and I think I did a pretty good job at it, minus the voice crack immediately trying to read the first word.
All things considered, man, very nice job. Probably got some bloopers from it, but hey, speaking of which...
Oh,
I believe
yeah.
We've actually got another surprise for all you lovely, lovely, lovely listeners out there.
Well, define surprise, because we've teased this for like the past two episodes and we failed to actually play it.
Well, this time it's actually going to happen because, thank Jesus, the hot stove is nice and cold, so we've got enough time to actually plug this into the beginning of the episode. So, we've been teasing it for two episodes, it's something we did last year, and it's something we've, Tom, let's call it greatly expanded upon this year.
Very much so.
That being our treasured, oh-so-treasured blooper reel of all of the outtakes, screw-ups, failed intros, horrible outros, usually by myself and Tom respectively on those fronts, all amalgamated into one wonderfully stitched together packages. One packages. Amazing grammar, Tony. Also, speaking of making the bloopers, a huge shout out to you for actually stitching pretty much the whole thing together. That was an enormous uptaking. I offered you help. You did not need it. You put it together. You're a champ. So props to you for that. Props to Tom. He put together last year's as well. Editing wizard over here. Last year's highlights, some of them included the rapping of Joe Pesci's Wise Guy. I think that's where Careless Whisper first came into play. And this year was highlighted by a lot. A lot of stuff. I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to spoil it before we get into it.
Yeah. I guess the notes that I'll say before we get there, this blooper reel, gag reel, whatever you want to call it, this version for 2022 to 2023 is about 11 minutes long, essentially double of what it was last year because of everything that's happened. It's in a little bit of a different style than last year. It's still broken up into parts and whatnot, but we try to evolve. We don't try and do the exact same thing. I'd also like to point out, this probably took about 10 to 12 hours of editing and finding all of the cuts and all that, because as you remember, I had 150 bloopers, over 150 bloopers, that I had cut up from last year alone. And then that got narrowed down to 69, nice, and not intentional, bloopers that I then narrow down again to a number that I do not remember. And Tony also sent me bloopers as well. So this took a lot of time and effort. I think it was well worth it. And then we hope that you enjoy it as well. And this perfectly, actually coincidentally, lines up to a thank you from me and Tony for 2,000 listens on the Diamond Duo podcast. Thank you so much. It took us a long time to get to 2,000. But you know what? We did it. As we'll probably say whenever we hit another milestone, here's to X many more. So here's to 2,000 more listens and many, many, many beyond that. Let's just get right into it because it's 11 minutes and we've got a lot to talk about. Here is the blooper reel from this year, the 2022-2023 season of the Diamond Duo podcast. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Diamond Duo podcast. Wow, one sentence in and I already f***ed it up. This is a great start.
No, you should keep going. Just keep rolling with the punches. Why not?
Welcome back. I f***ed up. Anyway.
This episode of the Diamond Duo podcast is brought to you by this multicultural message to those who won't accept the new rules of the game. Pure Dolce Boomer, Preston Beach, Brosnan.
I haven't gotten this sentence yet.
Kiemi Bolshe, Popros Tukaje Grey.
Tom, I want you to know this. I've been dating a Polish woman for over 3 years now. I've been inundated in the Polish language for this time. And even though I'm far from fluent, I have no clue what you were even trying to communicate. And this episode of the Diamond Duo podcast is brought to you by exterminators. Not... I'm gonna take that.
By exterminators. Tony needs to exterminate his way out of this intro because he's messed it up three times.
Exterminate my fucking brain.
It's spooky season, which can only mean one thing. Trick or treat, motherfuckers! This is gonna be a blooper, but fuck it. Let's continue anyway.
This episode of the Diamond Duo podcast is brought to you by cocaine, doing less damage than just the Chicago White Sox.
Oh my god. That's the intro you chose to go with? You went over the line.
The line?
Oh. Jesus.
Oh, we're f***ing well over that line and I'm staying there. That's
no, no, with cocaine. Oh, we should stop while we're ahead.
Don't do drugs, kids.
This show is brought to you by that global phenomenon this week, cocaine. Cocaine Bear. Roar!
Tom, I'm laughing for two reasons. Number one, the obvious one. And number two, the preconceived notion in my head or the preconceived outcome of your sentence that you were gonna say the global phenomenon of cocaine.
Well, I mean, listen, cocaine is a hell of a drug. I'm just gonna roar into the mic and we'll see how it turns out.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I'll have that too. Maybe I'll sync those up now.
Ladies, gentlemen, and especially the ladies, welcome to our nicest episode yet. Episode 69. We just want you to be pumping and pumping and pumping your fist along in anticipation and celebration. In this episode, we'll talk about some guys who
got a monster stick,
but inevitably, like Brian Cashman, at seemingly every deadline, will also leave fans saying,
"He wines and dines everybody before he completely f***s them."
We're also going to talk long and hard about
Dick
Monford's Colorado Rockies, because as Rockies fans know all too well,
they went to Pound Town and were f***ing you
out of every single ounce of satisfaction. Anyway, this intro's been going on long enough, and you're probably asking us,
I mean, are you gonna give it to me?
This episode will have you screaming out loud, want more, and may even leave you, yes, that. So without further ado,
we just gotta stop talking about the f***ing and actually talk about some baseball. Tony, you must admit I made magic to that intro. ChatGPT, write me a sexy intro to a podcast about baseball.
Welcome to Diamond Desire, where passion meets the plate. The podcast that's ready to hit it out of the park and slide into your deepest baseball fantasies.
Excuse me, that was the part of the intro. Please. I just had to do that.
Do not edit that out. It's all sexy and then...
I had a perfect sound effect for that. Is it this?
Really
shove it down your throat. Yeah, that.
This is so off the rails, and you are not even two sentences in. You are halfway through introducing yourself.
So grab your headphones tight, because we're about to explore the sensual side of strikeouts, the steamy secrets of stolen bases.
Now, this next sentence is going to make me uncomfortable saying it, but f*** it.
And the undeniable allure of those tight uniforms. that leave us all begging for an extra inning.
So now's a great time to say, that was not ChatGPT. Tom wrote that by himself.
Images of empty seats in the stadium, disappointed fans, and struggling players appear.
Hi, I'm Sarah McLachlan. Meet the Los Angeles Angels. The spirit that once carried them to greatness now seems trapped in the grip of adversity. And at the center of this tale stands Artie Moreno, the guardian of their destiny.
Images of Artie Moreno and headlines about ownership controversies are shown. My mic didn't unmute for a second there.
It's gonna be in the recording!
Take it out!
For only 50 cents a day, you can help Shohei Ohtani sign with a new franchise. Let this be a call to remember the glory days.
I'm sorry, the music faded out. Oh my god.
Let the halos glow.
The music fades out as the screen displays a message urging fans to support the team.
Stand with the Angels.
Screen fades to black with the hashtag Revive the Halo. End of PSA.
All right. Here we go. I'm a sick, psychotic, f***ed up little man.
I am drinking all the espresso depresso right now.
You go on about Dick.
That's not a violin. What am I, stupid?
I can't wait for him to blow it up for me right in my face.
Eat s***, commies.
Tony stared at my chest because Jeremy Pena was laying on it.
Oh, that's downloaded and in my phone already, my friend.
Well, let me tell you why Dick is on our minds right now.
Do you wish sex?
Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger.
Oh, f*** that recording.
This episode is brought to you by Riz, something Tom does not have.
I'm dying inside.
I wanna wake up
in a city,
that doesn't sleep.
And find King of the Hill. Top of the heap.
All right, that's enough of that. 1-877 arms for kids. K-A-R... No. A-R-M-S arms from kids. 1-877 arms from kids. Give it to Bryce Harper today. Da-da-da.
Forza Italia! Woo! Psych!
America! Yeah! Coming to save the motherfucking day, yeah! Eagle!
Ka-ka-ka!
The Yankees signed Cashman. I'm gonna go kill myself. Good throwback. Our buddy Jesse says, wait for me, Tony.
Can we make this like a threesome? But then you gotta do your own homework and realize to make sure everything looks tip-top and diddly-doodle-dandy. I don't
Hello, Giants. This is the Mets. I'm calling to make sure Carlos Correa is tip-top diddly-doodle-dandy. Ah, yes, Mr. Steve Cohen. He's actually doodly-dabbly-toop. I only know how to say the bad stuff in Italian.
Say something bad, then. I'm not going to censor it.
Vaffangola, mannaggia marona, andare a morire in un incendio. There you go.
Okay, now, real loudly into the microphone, translate what you said, and I will censor that.
Oh, okay. I said, f*** you, Mother of Mary. F*** off, go die in a fire.
Oh, dear God in heaven. Speaking of relievers, I can't say his last name. I was going to say Nutsack Muttzack, but that's not his name at all.
Calling him Tyler Muttzack from here on out. I believe that's Peter Fairbanks throwing, crossing up his catcher. Gets a slider to the nuts. So that's two balls and a strike.
Please wear a cup so you don't swell up your testicles on the baseball field.
In 5 minutes, we got you going, congrats on the sex, and Keeper Ruiz has swollen testicles.
Well, you know, those things could be hand in hand. Frisky Framber Valdez. Framber was, let's say, touching himself. Now, I know what you're thinking. Framber Valdez touched himself so much that Twitter went crazy.
He was feeling other places too. And when you mentioned he was wiping his hand off before he went to the umpire, like he was trying to wipe the sticky stuff off. This is just getting worse. I can't
stop it.
God damn it. You get what I mean.
Do you want me to ask ChatGPT for a sexy outro to this episode? I will do that. I want you to read this in a sexy voice.
I don't know if my voice is sexy enough. We must reluctantly bid adieu to this intoxicating episode. But fear not, dear listeners, for the passion of the game and the allure of the diamond will forever linger in our hearts. Our journey together has been a whirlwind of emotions and desires. Thank you for joining us on this alluring expedition into the world of baseball. Keep the spirit of the diamond alive. Play ball, dear listeners.
No, you gotta say that more seductively.
Play ball.
I couldn't, it threw me off because what the f*** kind of way is that to end an episode? Yeah, the call to action is actually go out there and play baseball. What, you think we're gonna just sit down here in our basements like a bunch of hermits and talk about baseball? You f*** crazy. Go outside and play, you lazy ass.
So we hope we didn't scare you off with that blooper reel like we did probably with the intro to this episode. So again, we hope you enjoyed all that transpired over the past year alone. And trust me, folks, we're going to have many, many more moments just like that into this unknown future that we've got on this podcast. Again, thank you so much, everybody, for listening so far. If you're one of the 2,000 listeners out there, if you're just tuning in for the first time, we hope you get to stick around and join us on our baseball escapades that Tony and I inevitably take throughout the next year and beyond.
Absolutely. We're going a couple of years strong now. We've got 2K listeners. This has not gotten any less fun than when we first started it. So please, if you like what you're hearing, come along for the ride. And if you have even half as fun as Tom and I are having making the show, then by God, stay with us. You're going to have a ton of fun. And like you said, here's to 2,000 more. Here's to plenty, plenty more in the episodes and years to come. Thank you from the bottom of both of our hearts. And hey, if you do want to stick around, why don't you leave us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to this podcast? It is a really big morale boost to Tom and I. It looks really, really nice for the old Spotify page. Spotify, Apple, wherever it is you're listening. And of course, follow us on social media. At Diamond Duo Pod on Twitter or X. I almost said the wrong handle. That would have been embarrassing.
It would have been.
The Diamond Duo Podcast on Instagram. I'll save the embarrassment for next year's blooper reel, which we've already started constructing, by the way. I forget if it was the last episode, Tom, or the one before, the one where we talked about like the Shemit Shank or whatever it was, the thing that the Rangers were serving during the World Series. I saved like 5 bloopers from that episode alone, man. This is going to be a fun year.
Oh, you mean this moment?
I'm going Shmeet 110%. God damn it. Before we go on any more tangents, Tom, let's say we get right into this, because the hot stove may not be firing on all cylinders right now, but taking the every other week upload schedule still means the transactions are going to pile up, no matter how small they are. But the first two I've got lined up here are not very small, and they are not for the faint of heart. If you're in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle fans, cover your ears. If you don't want to hear about Jerry DePoto giving away all of your team's power, either way, I'm just going to rattle them both off right away, Tom, and then we could go into them. They struck 2 deals, one with the Braves, one with the Diamondbacks. To the Atlanta Braves, they sent Jared Kelnick, Marco Gonzalez, and former top hitting prospect Evan White in exchange for a couple scraps in Jackson Cower and Cole Phillips. And then to the Diamondbacks, this one was actually, Tom, I think this is one of the deals that broke while we were editing the last episode, which, might I remind everyone, is great. It's my favorite part about this show, is just missing out on stories.
Goddamn, work here with you. We got breaking news coming up here on MLB Network as the Boston Red Sox and New York Yankees make in their 6th trade of the wild card era.
Oh, idiot.
But they got Eugenio Suarez from the Mariners, Arizona did. And in exchange, all they had to give up was Carlos Vargas and Sebi Zavala. Oh boy, vintage Mariners baseball's back, isn't it, Tom? Like 2-3 years of contention and then right back to the cellar. Right back to selling off anything of note that isn't one superstar who's going to waste their entire career there.
I'm really happy for Jerry DePoto for catching wind of my Matt Chapman to the Diamondbacks prediction for free agency. Literally 48 hours after we recorded that episode, the Eugenio Suarez news breaks within that time period, effectively killing one of my predictions dead before the episode even released. So thank you, Jerry DePoto, and who's Arizona's GM, Mike Hazen or something like that?
Mike Hazen.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate that. Now, I'm not happy for Mariners fans, because in the words of Jerry DePoto, we are trying to win 54% of our games each and every season, and then we'll be a successful franchise. Yeah, no sh**. But you're also the Seattle Mariners, and you constantly make stupid decisions, and you constantly remind fans of your seemingly never fragile job security, because you've been there for years, you've definitely made the most trades over the course of baseball over that span of when you've been there, and you have little to nothing to show for it, except some shiny prospects, and now also the elusive distinction of saying Brody Van Wagenen may have won a trade. Yes, the former agent himself may have actually won that Edwin Diaz trade now. Yes, they got Robinson Cano from it, but theoretically, who provided more value to your organization in the long run? Jared Kelnick or Edwin Diaz? The answer, by the way, is not very hard to figure out. So Jerry DePoto really is doing all he can to possibly kill any shot of his team's offense next season. We knew Eugenio Suarez was kind of on that block, but he looked like to be a possible cap hit at some point. And you think, okay, you know what? Maybe they're going to get Matt Chapman, and maybe they still can. But now you're also getting rid of Jared Kelnick, too, which to me makes absolutely no sense unless there is a complete fracture of that relationship that happened in Seattle. By the way, he went on Instagram and thanked so many people for his time and whatnot. He never thanked the Seattle Mariners organization in that thank you note. Do you think that's a telltale sign of something that happened? Abso-f***ing-lutely. Something fractured, something shattered. And Jared Kelnick, we all know he loved Seattle. Or maybe he was just playing up for their fan base. We really don't know. But he showed his heart and devotion for Seattle, kind of becoming the spokesperson of the franchise before Julio Rodriguez established himself in the majors. But I don't get it. You invested so much into him just to trade two other players along with him, including another staple of the franchise, Marco Gonzalez, over the past couple of years. And you get Jackson Cower and Cole Phillips back. Was that really the best you can get from Atlanta for f***ing Jared Kelnick? Somebody who was a top prospect in baseball. I get they don't always work out, but he's shown his flashes. And quite frankly, on the Seattle Mariners offense, they could use any semblance of a flash possible in that lineup. So now losing him and Suarez is effectively killing your momentum for trying to compete for a playoff spot next year. Maybe they'll get it done because baseball is wild and the offseason is still very, very young. But now you're down a corner outfielder and a third baseman. And that third baseman provided a lot of spark and run production for your offense. And Jared Kelnick could have been doing the same for Seattle next year as well.
It makes no sense to me, especially because this was seemingly his breakout year. He was by no means an all-star or an MVP candidate, and he was a f***ing idiot and kicked a step or a cooler and essentially kneecapped the rest of his year by breaking his foot. But here's the thing. Sometimes prospects like Kelnick take a while to cook in the oven before they're ready. He's a prime example. He was a sub-replacement player in the big leagues before this year, until he finally made some adjustments in his swing. He hit the breaking ball a lot better, and he pounced on the fastball a lot more. And it resulted in a really, really good start to the season. He did taper off, like I said, and he kind of, you know, waned when it came to the breaking ball after the injury, but at the end of the day, he's 24 years old, his underlying metrics looked great all year, and Tom, you hinted at this, the Mariners aren't exactly lush with hitting talent right now. So let's just do a quick little experiment. I'm on the Mariners page of Baseball Reference from last season. Let's just discount Julio Rodriguez for a second, because yes, he's going to provide you with power and speed. Good, you have one guy for each of those things. Now you take out Suarez and Kelnick, who do you have left? Alright, you got Cal Raleigh, who's a 30-homer threat each year for power. That's not bad. You've got, Teoscar Hernandez is gone. You've got, Ty France hit 12 home runs last year, but was clearly on a decline. J.P. Crawford hit 19, but I don't really see him as someone who could crack much more. And then you got Yankees legend Mike Ford with 16. That's the power. That's it. And if you're looking for speed, hate to tell you, but of the regular starting nine for the Mariners, Rodriguez and Kelnick are the only ones who broke 10. If you discount Hernandez, they're the only ones that broke 3. The only other player who even was remotely competent on the base paths was utility man Jose Caballero. Telling you right now, man, I don't get what the Mariners are doing. Maybe they're trying to, like, open up the door for a bigger move, a bigger free agent signing. But this just feels like the same story again and again, Tom. Like, how many times have they let, you know, Adrian Beltre walk in free agency in order to sign a worse bat? Or how many times they, you know, couldn't afford to keep this star outfielder or great pitcher in order to save money for a bigger player down the road, but they ultimately have to settle for a downgrade because no one wants to come to Seattle. And I'll give them credit in this one way. They do have a really good pitching staff. I love their rotation, and their bullpen can be sneaky good if they go get a closer. The Mariners' upside to me right now is the New York Islanders of the MLB. They can pitch like gods and allow no more than 2 runs every game, but you can't win ball games if you don't produce on offense. You cannot score 1 run off a Julio Rodriguez home run every game and expect to win ball games. There has to be more to this offseason for the Mariners, because I get it. If you don't want to be spending as much money, these aren't the worst pieces to give up on. But number one, you could have gotten so much more. Tom, I'm with you on that. For Jackson Cower, he was a former first rounder, but has been a negative war player with the Royals his entire tenure so far. And Cole Phillips is a big question mark. You're trading a potential franchise-changing talent in Kelnick for some magic beans, and then for Suarez, it's even worse, because both of them are ready talents, and they suck. So, that's problem number one, you got nothing for them, and number two, you need to be ready to flush the team with talent, which I don't think they're prepared to do. They're the Mariners. DePoto seed has got to be hot by now. You mentioned it earlier that I don't know how he's got infinite job security, apparently. How many more good but not good enough seasons is it going to take for someone to finally light a fire under his ass? He's becoming the AJ Preller of the American League.
Do you want to know how long Jared Kelnick was exactly a Mariner for?
How long?
5 years on the dot. Because December 3rd of 2018, when the trade was made for Edwin Diaz and Robinson Cano. So he lasted exactly 5 years in the Seattle Mariners organization. And granted, he is only 24 years old. He hasn't even hit arbitration yet. He's not costing you a dime. He's not worthy of an extension yet. He's only been in service time for less than 2 years. He would have been a free agent in 2029. This decision is completely ass backwards. Good for the Braves for picking up another potential lethal weapon that they could possibly develop. And ironically enough, it would also hurt the Mets because, of course, the Mets traded Jared Kelnick as one of their top prospects. And now he can go back and hurt them as a member of the Atlanta Braves. That's hilarious, I'd like to point out. But the point still stands that what the hell are the Mariners doing? Because they've spent money on Julio Rodriguez, and that's seemingly it, I think, Tony. Like, I could probably go look at Spotrac and give you exacts, but if anything, it's not like it's costing you that much money to have kept Kelnick on your roster. Like, I can understand Suarez, because Suarez is getting up there in age, I'm pretty sure. In fact, I can give you his exact age in a second. He's 32, he'd be 33 by the middle of next season. He led the American League with 214 strikeouts last year. He played in every single game, so consistency is at least key. His numbers went down pretty much across the board. That was kind of a yellow flag right there, so I understand that. But you'd have to supplement that move in order to, you know, maybe make up for it. Now I just don't understand what the Mariners are really going to do and what their game plan is. We all know the rumors are true. Shohei Ohtani's not going to be a Seattle Mariner. Whoop-de-f-ing-new. I'm pretty sure we confirmed that in the last episode too, but we know that's not happening. So Jerry DePoto really is going to have to scrounge a team together and scrounge an offense together yet again. And guess what? It hurt them because they weren't a first half team last year. They weren't a first half team the year before. If you have no offense, I don't know how you're going to be a first or a second half team going into this year. At least, Tony, they have quite a bit of time to make up for these moves, because it is the offseason after all.
But that's that. Let's stay in the National League and talk about not a trade, but an extension. A very out-of-the-blue extension coming out of Milwaukee as they extended one of their hot young hitting prospects. Not Sal Frelich, not Bryce Turang. Not Joey Weimer, Jackson Chorio, the top prospect in the Brewer system, a top three prospect in all of baseball, if memory serves, very highly touted, getting comps to Ronald Acuna Jr., other dynamic game-changing outfielders currently in the game. He is a 19-year-old phenom, and he just got an 8-year extension worth a base of $80 million. Now, mind you, I said he was 19 years old. That was not a misread. And he's only played 6 games above the AA level. And what's even crazier is that this contract has got incentives and club options to take it up to $142.5 million over the next decade. Jesus Christ. They clearly saw all they needed to see in this kid. But Tom, stop me if I'm wrong. It seems a little presumptuous of the Brewers, a little like, hey, this is the horse you're backing? Like, he's good, but is he going to stay good?
Tony, you made, I think, possibly the perfect comp to this signing before the episode, where you said, maybe the Brewers should take a note from the White Sox and not sign your stars to this type of deal extremely early on, especially when he's only played 6 games above Double A. It's a little scary. We're specifically talking about Eloy Jimenez, by the way, if you don't get our drift. And look at how great Eloy's career has gone. No offense, he's a fantastic hitter. Dude gets hurt way too much, and hopefully that's not the case for Jackson Churio. But I don't know whether I should be applauding the Brewers for actually spending money toward their offense for once, or whether I should think they're completely insane and need to be drug tested. $80 million pretty much guaranteed for such a long time. I get this has been a trend in baseball, Tony, and we've talked about it over the past 3 years of the podcast, and this has been a trend that's well exceeded that. But at what point do we think these kind of massive extensions for these really hyped prospects, at what point do we say they're beyond ridiculous? I don't want to say he's beyond ridiculous because Jackson Churio legitimately is the number 2 prospect in baseball. His past season, he put up 128 minor league games. He put up 22 home runs, 91 RBIs, 44 stolen bases, and he only struck out 104 times over about 600 plate appearances. So he did extremely well, was a great run producer, and a slash line of 283, 338, and 467. Quite frankly, you gotta get that OBP up a little bit more, but honestly, I think the Brewers will take what they can get on offense, because if you have an OBP of 338, you're essentially a god in the city of Milwaukee. So you know what? That'll work out A-okay for them. But what's gonna happen if these deals just start to fall apart for these teams that have invested so much time and money into these contracts? What's going to happen? Are teams not going to be able to pick up guys in the trade market for these guys? Are teams going to have to eat all of this money? Are GMs going to be fired? Are presidents going to be fired? Is it going to create like a stalling for a team in the payroll of a team for multiple years, especially toward these smaller markets? I mean, I don't think this contract is beyond ridiculous, because if you look at it, it could be a really, really money-saving deal for the Milwaukee Brewers. Because again, 8 years at $80 million for a potential superstar? Yeah, that's a fantastic deal. So it could work out, but I just don't, I'm always skeptical about these, Tony. Because again, he's only played 6 games above the AA level, and that was, of course, last year in AAA with Nashville for their last 6 games. And he hit 333 there, but that's only 21 at-bats. That's not enough time for me to give him an $80 million deal. I'm sorry. I'm all in support of these players making money at such a young age, and especially in baseball, where you don't make a lot of money in the minors. So I support him making this money, but I'm going to pose it again, Tony. At what point are these deals a little bit beyond ridiculous?
Till the world starts to see more Eloy Jimenezes. Because I feel like the luster of the Ronald Acuna deal and the Ozzy Albies deal, and frankly now the Luis Robert deal, if he's for real, always seems so appealing to a GM. Because, oh, it's the same mindset as, you know, buying a stock on the stock market. You buy low, and then when it appreciates to an astronomical value, you're going to look back and think to yourself, damn, I'm glad I bought into this when I did, when it was low, so I didn't have to pay for it now and give this individual, you know, individual here, not a stock, ass loads of money when I wouldn't have had to years ago. It's that mindset. These owners are, at the end of the day, corporate businessmen who know how to play the market, know how to move their money, know how to spend their money wisely, and that's kind of where they're coming from with this. And as much as it sucks, in recent years, it's worked out more than it hasn't. There are bad examples, like I said, with Luis Robert. Eloy Jimenez. Had Luis Robert not had the great year he did this year, he would probably be in that conversation too. But how many times are you going to hear the conversation, oh, Ronald Acuna and Ozzy Albies are on the most team-friendly deals ever? You know why? They signed him stupidly early. Like, before they had a chance to make a real name for themselves. And I suppose Milwaukee's trying to do the same thing here with Jackson Churio. It seems like they've struck gold, and he's showed that to them this year, you know, down in the minors. It's a small sample size, but if he could translate even a fraction of that to the major league level, which, number one, he's going to be the best hitter in Milwaukee's history, not named Christian Yelich, in the past like 20 years, if he's like that, if he takes that minor league form and takes that to the big leagues. And number two, if his value actually does pay off in the end, like if he does become the Brewers' answer to Ronald Acuña, you're just going to be more in line to build a better team around him in the future. So it does seem really wild in a vacuum. I don't think it's the worst deal out there, but at the same time, it comes with a lot of risks, especially those incentives. Mother of God, $140 million for a guy who hasn't even who's barely sniffed AAA. Would have been unheard of over a decade ago. It's kind of wild to see how far the game's come, Tom. Invest early and profit later, I suppose.
That's the Braves strategy. I mean, look, you mentioned Acuña and you've mentioned Albies, but you also got to remember there's a name like Vaughn Grissom that signed a contract. Not as much as Jackson Chourios, but it's still a long-term deal for somebody who has relatively no experience at the major league level. And that one is not working out really well for them. So, like we said, there's deals that have obviously worked, and if it hasn't worked before, then obviously it wouldn't be a trend among baseball teams right now. It's just the point is, maybe we're going to see a guy who's maybe not even drafted, or maybe, I don't know what exactly it'll be, but maybe they'll make their draft slot money, and then maybe they're just immediately going to get the contract. Like right after that. Or maybe somebody just pays them a whopping contract like this right out of the draft. Like, I don't know exactly how the rules work, and I don't think it could work theoretically like that because of the draft slot. But maybe Major League Baseball becomes flexible with the rules and says, okay, this is a draft slot you got to pay over X amount of years. But if you want to make a long-term contract with them, absolutely, you go for it. And blah, 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 blah. Can't wait for that to eventually happen and then immediately backfire in the face of probably 25 franchises in Major League Baseball. There's a few that could probably pull them off and do it smartly, but it's baseball. The prospects come and go all the time. There's so much room for error, whether it be injury or you just lose your skill, you get the yips if you're the pitcher. It could be a wide variety of things that ultimately slow you down and effectively end your career. And Jackson Chourios's career has no end in sight, thankfully, so it could ultimately pan out for Milwaukee. But until then, we really don't know. He'll be in spring training. Maybe he'll be part of their roster this year. I think, honestly, because it's a smaller market team, they're probably going to try and flex his service time to at least another year. So I'd say 2025, we're going to see probably a lot more of Jackson Chourios. But what do I know about financials and service time in Major League Baseball? I just do a baseball podcast with a Pison across a Discord screen at midnight on December 5th of 2023.
Gabagool.
Yes, gabagool indeed. Milwaukee, I don't know if we also mentioned it, they also signed Wade Miley back for 1 year at $7 million. A very good deal for him. Wade Miley absolutely deserved it with the year he put up last year. That's all I'm really going to say about that because we've got a lot more news to get through, and we've also got other stuff that we've got to do. So, Tony, I say let's... But actually, you know, I kind of want to talk about the Cardinals a little bit here. Not as much in depth as we talked about the other two, but they definitely deserve some mentions because they've got an interesting strategy of let's go sign a lot of former Yankees and let's have the oldest f***ing rotation in Major League Baseball history. That's surely going to work out in a young man's game, in a kid's game after all. Of course it'll work out.
I mean, they saw what 38-year-old Miles Michaelis did last year. He pitched to a 2.5 ERA. Oh, no, he didn't, did he? No, he f***ing imploded from the first game of the season up until the end. Oh, that's crazy. You know what the solution to this is? More mid-30s pitchers. Sonny Gray, 3 years. Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, 1 year. So this makes their complete rotation... An ace of Sonny Gray, which all respect to him, fantastic season last year, second place Cy Young finish with the Twins, gutsy performance in the playoffs, he deserved the money. In a vacuum, I think that's honestly a fair deal for him. Miles Michaelis has roughly the number two pitcher coming off the worst season of his career. That's suspect at best. The guy could not find the zone, kept putting folks on base, and kept getting stung by the long ball when he did put it in the zone. A three pitcher of Lance Lynn. Hey, speaking of couldn't keep the ball in the yard, you remember when he gave up like four home runs in a row to the Diamondbacks in a two or die game? Yeah, I remember. That should be fun. Number four pitcher of Kyle Gibson. I keep calling him Gibson like it's a P. Gibson. He was just kind of whatever for the longest time, had a pretty respectable year, not this past year, but the season prior, had a pretty respectable year, I believe with the Phillies, But then he just kind of, you know, the wheels fell off last season with the Orioles, wasn't really the same pitcher, was kind of on and off. And it's clear he might be seeing signs of, you know, his skills atrophying with age. And then who's their number five guy? Like, Steven Matz? Are they going to yank him out of the bullpen again to get shelled every five games? Are they going to sign another guy? Hell, there's another Yankee on the market. You want to go get Jordan Montgomery? He was good in the postseason last year, and he's also he also happens to be a 30-year-old, I'm pretty sure anyway, and he was a former Yankee. So, that fits the bill they're going for. I really don't have much to say about this squad, other than I think it's cute that they think this is going to solve their problem. I honestly don't think they'll all blow up in their face. I feel like Sonny Gray might fare well. Might. Busch Stadium is kind of a... I don't know, is Busch Stadium like a hitter-friendly ballpark? I feel like it's kind of in the middle. It's definitely more hitter than pitcher. And Sonny Gray pitched really, really well in Great American Ballpark, which is far and away a hitter-friendly park. So he should be okay. The others, not so much. I'm not holding my breath on the Cardinals this year. Tom, you got like a prophecy for them this year? Is the pitching going to carry them to maybe 70 wins?
Listen, if the prophecy died, it chose a great time to die before the 2023 season for any sort of prophecy for the St. Louis Cardinals. There will never be another prophecy again until Ali Marmol loses his job in St. Louis, because I think he is single-handedly, there's dumbass decisions across the board, but he is one of the main reasons this team is tanking. And I'm not going to blame him for having a probably average age of 33 rotation, but it's certainly not going to help his case, and it's not going to help the case for Cardinals fans out there anywhere. So if you want a prediction, I can give you a prediction. Their rotation is going to suck once again, probably be a little bit better, and that's all about it. I think Sonny Gray's ERA is going to jump to probably the mid-threes. By the way, their ballpark is about 100. On like a over-under kind of like 100 thing favoring batters or pitchers, it's about right in the middle, according to Baseball Reference. So there's not really a huge favor. Maybe it favors the pitching a little bit. It's 99 and 99 for batting and pitching over a multi-year factor, but whatever. So the ballpark is a wash, but the prediction is the rotation is going to get hurt. They're not going to have enough names. They're going to try and make a trade in the middle of the season. They're going to do that for another expiring contract for an older pitcher. They think it's going to solve their woes, and inevitably, they're probably going to end up being 10 games back in the National League Central race come the end of the 2024 season. And it'll prove once again that they need to continue to invest in starting pitching, whether it be in the farm or whether they actually open their f***ing checkbooks for once. The Colorado Rockies saved you a lot of money a couple years ago. Maybe you should use some of that money and put it to good use. I get Sonny Gray at $25 million a year. Again, really good deal. They hit him right at market value. So that was a very good deal for the St. Louis Cardinals. Will it work out? I don't know. Sonny Gray can be a little bit fluky, but maybe I think that's just because my Yankees bias is telling me he sucked as a Yankee, but he's actually done pretty good everywhere else. So who knows? But if you're really going to rely on Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson going into next year and Miles Mikolas to eat you a lot of innings and provide you decent pitching depth, you're out of your mind. Especially considering this bullpen was completely atrocious last year. I think they may have made some moves to fix it. I could be thinking of another team, but it doesn't really matter. The offseason's still young. They got time to fix their problems if they really want to.
With that's all the moves for the time being. Yes, the hot stove really is that slow. Psych!
Well, well, well. If it isn't Editor Tom making an appearance in an episode, an off-season episode, of the Diamond Duo podcast. Now, I know exactly what you're thinking. Tom, Tony, you guys just got screwed again because news just broke immediately after releasing and in the portion of editing another episode of the Diamond Duo podcast. And yes, you would be absolutely correct. It's utter bullshit at this rate. Luckily for us, we're not on the levels of Carlos Correa-type purgatory, let's say, yet, because it's not like a three-team merry-go-round going on for Correa that's going to cause us, hopefully, to record three times. No. Right now it is 9:35 p.m. on Wednesday, December 6th, so anything that happens after this will not be touched in this episode, I guarantee it. Even if news breaks 10 minutes after I'm done recording this little segment for you guys. So, why are you recording this? So we were going to talk about the Juan Soto rumors right here in the episode and how the San Diego Padres asking price for the New York Yankees was seemingly really, really high, thinking at least seven players plus prospects. But news broke today in the middle of the day, December 6th, that the deal for Juan Soto to the Yankees was being finalized. Now, of course, the day before, Jack Curry, among other baseball pundits, were kind of toying with the idea that Juan Soto to the Yankees is a very likely possibility. But as of today, again, December 6th, it's seeming like that fantasy is actually becoming a reality. Per John Morosi, around 4 o'clock today, Juan Soto trade agreement is being finalized now, source confirms. The deal, as Jack Curry and Joel Sherman reported, sends Juan Soto and Trent Grisham to New York for Michael King, Drew Thorpe, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and Kyle Higashioka. So not quite the haul that the Padres were initially expected to get, but still a pretty good haul enough for them, obviously. Getting a lot of pitching depth in Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and of course Michael King, and Drew Thorpe, the Yankees' top pitching prospect, and of course Michael King being pretty much their number two starter for, say, for the last month of the season. He looked tremendous out of the bullpen all year, looked tremendous as a starter, and now it looks like he's going to get his opportunity out in San Diego to expand upon that. So, again, not quite the prospect pool San Diego was initially reported to get, but that benefits the Yankees. Probably also because they have to take on Trent Grisham, and they probably also negotiated this to where they're like, realistically, we're only going to have Juan Soto for at least 1 year because Scott Boras is his agent, and of course, they're going to demand the most amount of money possible out in free agency, and Scott Boras doesn't do extensions. However, that deal is only being finalized, it seems, because later on in the evening, Brian Hoke tweeted something out that says the delay on the Juan Soto trade is coming from San Diego's side as they review medicals/information. Stay tuned. You've also got SNY's Andy Martino reporting that there's some, let's say, stopping blocks that could be potentially making this trade lethal at any point, essentially blowing it dead. However, everything is expected to go through as Martino is also reporting. So right now it's a lot of conflicting reports going on, but it does seem like Juan Soto, believe it or not, is going to be a New York Yankee. It'll make Tony and I very, very happy. Maybe we'll even be belting out New York, New York, like you heard earlier in this episode in the blooper reel. Maybe we'll bring that back because literally the next coming of Ted Williams is going to be a New York Yankee, it seems. However, again, we know what happened with Aaron Judge last year. By the way, December 6th today, the anniversary of Aaron Judge. So wouldn't it be funny if this kind of happened yet again? I'm seriously asking you. It wouldn't be funny. I'm a Yankee fan. So no, I don't want to go through this heartache again. Hopefully the deal will actually get finalized. But again, we don't know yet. In the next episode, we'll be able to divulge plenty more details about this trade. If it goes down, what went wrong if it didn't go down, we'll be able to dissect it all. But for now, that is just the news break for you guys. And yes, we're also aware that Alex Verdugo was literally traded to the New York Yankees from the Boston Red Sox less than 24 hours after doing the episode as well. But we're not talking about that here. Juan Soto is a lot more of a prized package. You'll be hearing a lot more about Verdugo, I'm assuming, in the next episode as well. But until then, Tony and I are once again salty that stuff is happening immediately after we record. However, it's for the Yankees' benefit. I think we can make an exception here. Enjoy the rest of the episode, folks. We've got to get into this Hall of Fame ballot prediction stuff before it becomes 1 o'clock in the evening. So let's get right into it. So before we get onto our actual ballots that Tony and I are going to construct, a huge congratulations to one new Hall of Famer that we know already, the great manager of the Detroit Tigers, the Florida Marlins. Who else did he manage? I think he managed the Rockies at one point.
Pirates.
Either way. Oh, the Pirates, definitely, because he had that infamous incident with Barry Bonds that honestly should have earned him an automatic inclusion into Cooperstown at that very moment. That, of course, is the always cheerful Jim Leland. Also, WBC manager of the 2017 gold-winning USA team from that World Baseball Classic. Jim Leland elected via the contemporary ballot, the only name elected, Lou Piniella, missing it by one vote yet again. I don't know what he did to those four people that didn't vote for him, but they must have it out for Lou Piniella if they're going to exclude him by one vote once again. I think that's a complete atrocity, but I don't control the contemporary ballot. It's really a game of favoritism there. Although Jim Leland, completely deserving of it, though. I mean, Tony, do you want to go through his resume or share any memories of that you want of Jim Leland? Because clearly this man, based on his stories alone about being a smoker and all that, and the Barry Bonds incident, and how many teams he's managed, and actually won the first World Series with the Florida Marlins somehow in their 1997 yes. season. I mean, he's got a treasured story in Major League Baseball.
Absolutely, and the fact that you could ask many different generations of baseball fans to name a Jim Leland story, and they'll give you a different answer, is indicative of how amazing a career he had. I'm going to throw this one out super quick. Do you remember the Armando Galarraga game, Tom?
Oh, God. I wish I didn't.
If y'all don't know, he threw a perfect game, but Jim Joyce f***ed up the call at first base, and it was a 28-out perfect game. I refuse to call it anything else. Either way, after Jim Joyce flubbed the call, Jim Leland came out and just talked to him cordially, presumably saying something like, you gotta, like, you know, be in the moment, that's such a close call, you know, you gotta, like, just give the kid the no-hitter, like, probably asking him a couple questions, and then Jim Joyce sends him back to the dugout. And then the game ends. Jim Leland has since seen the footage and saw that the runner was so clearly out. Leland comes barging out of the dugout like a f***ing rabid dog. It starts hollering at Joyce. Like, how could you do that? How could you f***ing cost him like that? Just probably screaming, cursing at him. It's so good. I forget where I saw this from. I don't know exactly what he said, but just the difference in body language from when he first goes out there to when he knew that that umpire cost his pitcher a perfect game is amazing. Jim Leland had some legendary ejections, and that interaction you mentioned with Barry Bonds is all time too. That one there is a video of. If you folks want some good entertainment, I would look that up. But no, congrats to Leland, all-time great manager, absolutely deserved it, on your Hall of Fame induction. Congrats.
Won 3 pennants in his career, finished with 1769 in terms of wins. I would tell you where it ranks in manager history, but I don't have that pulled up. And quite frankly, you could do your own research on that alone. So don't be a lazy ass. Go look it up if you really want to know. Apologies for calling you a lazy ass out there, but I'm God being damn. A lazy ass in the process. Yeah, I'm being a lazy ass in the process, and I'm calling everybody else a lazy ass. So look at me go. I'm just a cheery Christ. And delightful person. You know what? Now you know what? I feel bad. I'm shaming the people. Now I need to find out. Mangerial wins all time.
You're guilting yourself into looking up the list.
Yeah, pretty much. I kind of got to do it at this point, man. The 78-year-old Leland, 18th all-time, with 1,769 wins. A .506 Very winning nice. Percentage. Yes, that is Jim Leland's record. I would talk more about him, but honestly, we got so much else to do that, unfortunately, we can't give it the time that it needs. But we'll probably do it in August again anyway, or July, when the Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremony actually takes place. Maybe we'll talk about Leland more then. Maybe he'll have a nice speech that he gave at some point. But if you're interested, he's a very, very interesting man in baseball. Go give him a look. And Jim Leland, hopefully, will be joined by at least one member of the current ballot for 2024 from the players list.
Yes.
So, Tony, I think we got to start rattling through this list, and then we'll give our ballots how we construct them and whatnot, and ultimately who we're putting on the ballot. Now, if you haven't been with us before over the past 2 years when we've done this song and dance before, doing the exact same process as we have before. Of course, we'll explain our thoughts as we go on, but we're not going to drone on and on and on about why we may or may not take a steroid guy on the ballot, why we vote for a certain number limit of people, why we're not going to be scumbags and only vote for one or zero names, because those people deserve to burn in hell and we don't want to burn in hell for all of eternity. So, yeah. Again, that was extreme, but I'm being very aggressive right now. So I'm just going to hand it off to Tony before I say something really, really compromising to this podcast's integrity, if I haven't already.
I was going to say, you already called our listeners lazy, so, you know, maybe it's a good thing you throw it off to me before you call them something worse.
Hey, yeah, but at least I apologize for that. I'm not apologizing for people who vote for one or zero people on the Hall of Fame ballot. Those people really do suck.
they don't deserve to be apologized to, especially if they're a big enough coward to make their name anonymous. So, yeah, Tom and I are not going to do that. We're not going to chicken out on you guys. We're going to give 10 votes to 10 very deserving players. You know, some more than others, but you got 10 votes. You might as well use them. We're going to go through the ballot, give our reasons why we selected each player. Spoiler alert, this is our third year doing this, and a good chunk of the players, like half of them or more, are retreads of players from years past. Don't expect too deep of a deep dive this time. But nevertheless, we're going to go through each of the players right now, and then we're going to get started building our ballots. I'll take the first half, and this is going alphabetically. The players on the Hall of Fame ballot are as follows. Bobby Abreu, Jose Bautista, Carlos Beltran, Adrian Beltre, Mark Burley, Bartolo Colon, Adrian Gonzalez, Todd Helton, Matt Holliday, Torrey Hunter, Andrew Jones, Victor Martinez, Joe Mauer. That is the first half. Tom, why don't you pick up with the latter half?
Of course, we've got Andy Pettit, Brandon Phillips, Manny Ramirez, Jose Reyes, Alex Rodriguez, Francisco Rodriguez, not brothers, Jimmy Rollins, Gary Sheffield, James Shields, Chase Utley, Omar Vizquel, Billy Wagner, and Captain America himself, David Wright. Those are all the names on the ballot.
So, what say we get started in building these ballots with probably the most slam dunk easy new guy to throw on the ballot, Tom? I kind of want to have an allure of mystery to this in terms of like, ooh, who are they going to pick? But let's just rip this bandaid off out of the way. We're both putting him on. We need to talk about Adrian Beltre first and foremost.
Yes.
Because I'm just going to shoot straight, man. If you're not putting Adrian Beltre on your ballot, I'm going to hang up right now and this episode's going to have a really awkward ending. But either way, we've talked about Adrian Beltre on this show before, and God willing, we'll talk about him a ton more in the future. He is one of my favorite players of all time. Just a model of consistency, played so many years, one of the best third basemen there ever was, a 93.5 career WAR. That is the second most on this ballot to Alex Rodriguez. Oh, and hey, guess what? He did that without any help. He is absolutely getting my vote. He checks every single box. He is a slam dunk Hall of Famer. Wouldn't be surprised if he's pretty close to unanimous. Everybody loves Adrian Beltre.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if there'll be another anonymous player until a real, like, possible top 20 of all-time player is elected, such as, like, maybe Mike Trout or a Mookie Betts or Robert something Pujols. Like that, a Justin Verlander, that type of thing. Adrian Beltre had a very, very great career, over 3,000 hits, like Tony mentioned, over 90 WAR, won so many gold gloves. He's obviously going to be getting a vote. He's going to make the Hall of Fame this year by swimmingly, I hope. I mean, if he comes close to 75%, then I really don't know what the hell these voters are doing. Then I don't know who I can really trust and not trust who vote for these ballots. But he's definitely going to get everybody's vote. He's getting our vote for sure. So that's one and one that we agree on, Tony. So I guess we might as well, I know we did this before, but I'm also just going to rattle off the other names that are new on the ballot, and then we can say whether or not we're going to add them, I guess, because why not? Or maybe we can save it for a surprise later, who knows? Jose Bautista is also on the ballot, Bartolo Colon, big sexy. In terms of nicknames, yes. In terms of actual Hall of Fame candidacy, big fat no. Adrian Gonzalez, Matt Holliday, Victor Martinez, Joe Mauer, Brandon Phillips, Jose Reyes, James Shields, Chase Utley, and David Wright. Those are all the new names, including Adrian Beltre, that are on the ballot this year. And Tony, this is probably going to be the biggest, I guess, controversy of the new names, but there's realistically three that I'm seeing people that could actually really realistically get some votes here. And I think it's pretty obvious who they are. And Joe Mauer, Chase Utley, and David Wright. Those are really the only three with a true Hall of Fame case out of this entire list.
I can't disagree with you with that. A bunch of the players you mentioned are great players and deserve to be remembered, but I think they all fall into that Hall of Very Good type. Like, some just had great peaks, like Jose Bautista. But no, I agree with you on those three. I don't know if they'll make my ballot at the end of the day, but they make the most sense. They had a long enough career to, I suppose, qualify for an enshrinement in the Hall of Fame. They had a good chunk of the counting stats, particularly Mauer and Utley, but they've each got something holding them back. They were all good hitters, but it's just a matter of whether or not they have enough to supersede some of these guys, you know?
Yeah, and the way we're doing it, because again, like Tony mentioned, we're going to use all 10 of our votes again. They don't actually count toward anything. It doesn't actually count to the old tally.
Oh, yeah.
So, but we are of the opinion, even if they did, we're going to use all the votes, because we have the privilege to use all 10 votes. You might as well use them. Even if they're not realistically Hall of Fame players that are really going to get in there. For example, I voted for Jimmy Rollins last year, for whatever reason, between him and Torrey Hunter as my last pick. Am I going to choose Jimmy Rollins again this year? Probably not. But still, is he going to make the Hall of Fame? No. But I'm still going to put the vote out there for him because maybe the case can continue to a future ballot. Maybe he deserves to be on that ballot for a little bit longer. I mean, hell, Jimmy Rollins may have actually accumulated more stats in some regards than Chase Utley did, and Chase Utley is going to get a lot more Hall of Fame recognition. So who knows? That's just the way the system works. I guess we should start probably actually going through these names, Tony, before we keep getting sidetracked with this conversation. Now, the first one that's up there going alphabetically is Bobby Abreu, who's somebody who I added to my ballot last year. And Tony did vote for him as well last year. I believe you're a two-time voter for Bobby Abreu. I'm not seeing the green highlight over Bobby Abreu's name on your graphic from 2023. So we both voted for Abreu last year. And quite honestly, I still have to go through the rest of the names and determine who exactly I want. But he's a fringe guy. I added three guys to my ballot last year, which were Bobby Abreu, Jeff Ken, and Jimmy Rollins, the aforementioned. Well, Kent's not on the ballot anymore, so that automatically frees up one spot. And Jimmy Rollins, I'm pretty sure, I'm also not going to be voting for this year. So that's two spots that are opened up. And also Scott Rolen, who we also voted for last year, was the lone Hall of Famer. And guess what? We both voted for him. So that's three spots open from me. I will go through the names who I voted for last year when we get to them. They're all on the ballot again this year. And chances are, I may or may not vote for them again this year, but we shall see. Bobby Abreu, though, he's a fringe guy for me, Tony. Again, a stat accumulator. He has a great career, but I think really it's ultimately a case of Hall of Very Good, definitely not Hall of Fame. I gotta go through these names. Honestly, I'm thinking about leaving him off this year. I'm not gonna lie.
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least in a similar boat. But if you ask me, I feel like his career trajectory, his career outlook is very similar to guys on the ballot, like, you know, these big sexy new names that guys want to vote for, like Chase Utley and David Wright. I would argue he's better than both of them. I might be inclined to keep Bobby Abreu on, if I'm being completely honest. Obviously, he's not a slam dunk guy like Adrian Beltre or some of the guys we'll talk about later, but end of the day, I just like the fact that he could do everything. He's a 60 war guy. Hits like a maniac, solid defender, career OPS plus of 128, that's very respectable. For a guy who could do everything and mash like that, I think that's really commendable. I might end up voting for Bobby Abreu again, but that's going to be, you know, soon to be seen once the cement starts to settle. I'm going to, all due respect, I'm going to skip over Jose Bautista. You know, you mentioned the new guys who aren't going to get into the ballot or into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Hall of Very Good. Amazing peak. One of the most fun players in his day. Hated watching him against the Yankees. Not a Hall of Famer. I'm sorry. Carlos Beltran. Here's a conundrum. We had to get to the cheating faux pas at some point, Tom, and I fear we're going to reiterate what we have been the past 2 years, but luckily Beltran is not a steroid user. He is a noted percussionist of the Houston Astros. And that's what's kept his vote total at a pretty low 46.5, which isn't low in a vacuum, but for the career he put up, it's definitely low. Had it not been for that scandal, he would have been in last year. That's it. That's really all you have to say. If you discount the Houston cheating scandal, he's a Hall of Famer. If you don't, then he's not a Hall of Famer. Tom, I may be willing to, because there's a lot that goes into voting and a lot of it is strategic. Like, do you think this player is going to be on in the future for you to vote for him again? I really think Beltran will be. And at this point, I don't know if I'm ready to think about the sign stealing scandal yet. There's just a lot of names on this list I want to consider, and that might lead me to not check Beltran's name. I'm more willing to forgive him now than I was, you know, more in the moment when we started this podcast. So who knows, this time next year, he might be a shoo-in for me, if the ballot's thin enough. because given the accolades and his numbers, he deserves the Hall of Fame. It just depends on how heavily you weight his cheating scandal.
Oh boy, this one hits close to home. So I'm going to say a pretty bold statement, and this may or may not tip my hand to what I've already done in the past and what I'm going to continue to do in the future with steroid guys. I'm more willing to vote for Manny Ramirez and Alex Rodriguez at this point than Carlos Beltran. Unless there is more validity that somehow we find Carlos Beltran didn't have as much to do with this scandal as he actually did in what's been already out there, I will not vote for Carlos Beltran on all 10 years of my ballot unless something completely changes. For whatever reason, writers and all of them are privy to giving Altuve and saying, oh yeah, he's going to be a Hall of Famer and all that. And of course, with the numbers and career, yes. But are you really weighing in the cheating scandal? Because at that rate, if we're not going to weigh in that cheating scandal, what the hell are we actually doing with these steroid guys and leaving them off the ballot? With the Barry Bondses of the world, the Roger Clemens, countless other names. What the hell are we actually doing if we're going to have this whole character clause BS go on and you're going to include cheaters who cheated the game arguably a lot more than other guys did, because half the league was probably on steroids when these guys were doing it. It was willingly accepted. In my opinion, it was accepted by the commissioner of baseball at the time, Bud Selig, because you just had a strike, your ratings were shit, you needed to get baseball back into the mainstream view of your typical fan who felt betrayed by the strike and not having a World Series in 1994. And that, like, I guess it's a new generation of people and all that. But if we're gonna completely throw out the whole cheating thing for Beltran, where do we actually draw the line? And again, that's where the character clause comes into complete BS. The Hall of Fame should specifically say, based on cheating or whether or not they are automatically on the ballot or not. Stop leaving it up to the writers. And that's something, again, that we've carried over from year to year. That's just my two cents on it this year. I'm going to leave it out there. Beltran is not getting my vote. Sorry. I'd rather vote for Jimmy Rollins again than Carlos Beltran. I know Carlos Beltran statistically is very well deserving and would be in this year if not last year. Hell no. Absolutely not. He's not going to get my vote anytime soon.
That's fair. I am trying to lean less on that character clause myself. I want to use it more to build a player's case up rather than break it down. Hence why I voted for Curt Schilling 2 years in a row. But nevertheless, it doesn't sound like he's going to be on either of our ballots anyway, so let's move on. We already talked about Beltre, so next up is Mark Burley, who, if memory serves, he was actually on my ballot last year. Tom, your 10th man? He was. He was actually my 10th edition.
Oh, Christ, it was.
Yours was J-Roll, and mine was Mark Burley, and I'll still defend that. Mark Burley's a fringe 60 war guy who was a model of consistency. Can you tell I like players like that? From a pitching standpoint, that is exceedingly rare to come by, especially in today's game for the type of pitcher he is. He's not going to make it in, but I decided to throw him the vote because I thought he deserved it more than the rest of the guys on the list. Sadly, I feel like he might be the odd man out for me, just like Rollins is for you. I really like Burley, and I could honestly see the argument, but at the end of the day, he might fall to the wayside to a guy like Mauer or Utley for me, even a guy like Torii Hunter, who I didn't vote for last year. Great player, I just don't know if I'm going to be able to afford him my vote this year. I'll have to circle back to him.
I'm not going to give him a vote this year. There's too many other names that I think are more deserving of it. As we were going through this ballot, I was typing in the names that I'm like, yes, yes, yes. He's a fringe guy. Even if I wanted to consider him, there's other names that I feel are more deserving based on accomplishments and everything that supersede the career of Mark Burley. Don't worry. There's plenty of Mark Burley truthers out there that have even voted for him in the past. I mean, look at it. He's been on the ballot for this long already. Looking back at his history, he's lasted three ballots. He got 11%, 5.8%, and 10.8%. Surely he'll probably last yet again until there's a much stronger ballot in the future, if there's even a such thing, because apparently nobody wants to put anybody in the Hall of Fame anytime soon, because apparently everything has become a Hall of Very Good. Just shut the hell up, people. Just calm yourself. It's a Hall of Fame honoring baseball. Calm your roll. I guarantee every other old-ass name that's in that Hall of Fame, half of them would be Hall of Very Good today. Just saying. Mark Burley's a no for me, though, in that regard. You can circle back to him. You can add or drop him if you want from your ballot. I'm not going to give him the vote. I'm going to go through these next two names in unison because I can probably already guarantee we're going to be voting no on Big Sexy himself, Bartolo Colon, and Adrian Gonzalez. Now, Bartolo Colon, you might argue, okay, he's got the win totals. He might have some accumulation, and I'll tell you why. Because his accumulation is that he has 247 wins. He has over 2,500 strikeouts. But also, you got to keep in mind, he's got an ERA of 4.12, and he only has 46.2 WAR. The WAR might be comparable to Jack Morse, if I'm not mistaken. The wins certainly supersede some others that are in the Hall of Fame, but let's grow up, people. Like, Bartolo Colon, icon forever. His legend will never die. I am completely on board with that. Maybe he'll even be in the Baseball United Hall of Fame one day for the valor that he puts on for one of the four Dubai teams. I really don't know. He's not going to make the Baseball Hall of Fame. Also, steroids. Bing. Automatically an out for me. Oh, yeah, that's one of the steroid rules, I guess. If you get popped for a steroid suspension and you're actually suspended, that's going to be an automatic no for me. Sorry, you played the game, but you got caught. I can't really do that. So I guess that's really where my character clause is. If you get actually suspended for it, it's probably going to be an automatic no for me. Sorry, that's just how I play it. Adrian Gonzalez, Hall of Very Good for the San Diego Padres, was a slugger. You can say the same thing for his short time in Boston, and of course, his extended time with the Dodgers. Not going to be a Hall of Famer. Which leads us to somebody who we've both voted for, Todd Helton, who makes a very, very strong case because of all the accomplishments he had with the Colorado Rockies. Again, we voted yes before. Guess what? He's getting a vote again. Hopefully soon he'll also be in Cooperstown because he's probably one of these guys that are very, very close to being elected based on the ballots.
I have nothing new to add to this conversation. I didn't say the past 2 years. The stigma that, ooh, he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame because he played a Coors is stupid and dumb. Can we just put that to bed? It's not like steroids where he had a choice to do something that's against the rules. Oh man, I'm sorry I got drafted by the Rockies and I benefited by the thin air up there. Wasn't exactly my decision. Oh, and a point, he has a better road OPS than multiple Hall of Famers. Don't even get me started on that. But Helton's a Hall of Famer. One of the best hitting first basemen of his generation. His career as a whole isn't going to jump out the page at you as like an all-time great first baseman. But for his generation and the numbers he put up, he's a Hall of Famer. I'm frankly surprised he isn't in already.
I just want to interject. Last year, if you didn't think he was a Hall of Famer, guess what? He got 72.2% of the vote last year.
Yes.
So just imagine what it's going to be like this year. That's all I'm saying.
Where he's a bona fide headliner amidst guys who don't have controversies to them. If there's anyone who I am willing to bet is getting in this year, I'm willing to bet it's Helton. There's a couple other guys later, but we'll get to them when we get to them. They won't be now, though. The next two guys are Matt Holliday and Torii Hunter. Matt Holliday, I'll just square away. Hall of Very Good. I love his hitting stats. Him and Adrian Gonzalez, I could honestly talk about as some of the more underrated hitters of their time. They definitely deserve recognition from the teams they played for. But as for him, probably going to be a one and done. Sad but true. Torii Hunter's interesting for me because I've always toyed with the idea of putting him on my ballot. And I'm going to be honest, he might fall off this year. He was at 6.9% nice last year in his fourth year. And with big names coming on the ballot, he might be the odd man out for actual voters. And I wouldn't exactly blame them. He had a really good career. 50 WAR, over 2,000 hits, amazing defender. Was just never that great at everything. You know what I mean? Jack of all trades, master of none. He always felt like... I feel like a decent comp to him would be like a lesser Bernie Williams, so to speak. A better defending, but worse hitting Bernie Williams. He kind of falls like smack dab in the middle of everybody, and that's what kind of turns people off, is that he's so ordinary from that, you know, compared to these other guys. There's nothing ordinary about him. Great player. But he's another guy like Burley for me. I might circle back around and give him a check, but we'll see. I really do like Torii Hunter, despite what I'm saying. It might seem a little mean, but I love his defensive numbers. I love the stats he accumulated, and end of the day, that might be enough, but we'll see. We'll see what the other names come out to for me.
Yeah, I'd say he's like two pegs down of a Don Mattingly, honestly, in the outfield type of defensive stalwart in his position. He won 9 gold gloves. Surprisingly, he's only got 4 defensive WAR in his career and actually negative defensive metrics, which is somewhat surprising to me, at least. Maybe they need to be recalculated, because I don't know who punched them into the calculator. One of those analytic nerds, but they may have got the numbers wrong there. Numbers usually don't lie, but I feel like that's a complete lie that he's got negative defensive analytics in his career. But like you said, he's been a fringe guy for me as well. He's on the fringe of that 10th vote as well. I don't think he's going to get it, though, ultimately at the end of the day for me. I'm still toying with that last one. I'll reveal it toward the end of this, because there's other names toward the end of the ballot alphabetically that could very, very well be that fringe guy. But let's talk about a guy who could actually realistically make the Hall of Fame and was on both of our ballots last year. I'm assuming it's going to be the same this year. That is Braves legend Andrew Jones. Andrew Jones, the thing that's holding him back is the second half of his career. Dude put up 62.7 career WAR in the 17 seasons that he's played. Just shy of 2,000 hits, 434 home runs. If he had just a prime of probably three more years, he'd be a lock-in for Cooperstown. Instead, he ended his career as a five-time All-Star and a 10-time Gold Glover. 10 times in a row, he won the Gold Glove. Postseason numbers, I believe he's got a long accumulation in the postseason, and most of it is all for the better. So he's got that going for him too. Last year, he got 58.1% of the ballot, which I believe was the highest he's received in the past. Yeah, he started 77.3% on the 2018 ballot, and now he's at 58.1%. So he's one of those late bloomers on the ballot. Honestly, he realistically could get in this analytic age, and for his sheer dominance in the first half of his career, he's a yes from me. I'm assuming it's the same from you, Tony.
When you hit 400 home runs while being considered unanimously a top defensive center fielder ever, even if you're not number one, even if you're number two or three to Ken Griffey Jr. or Willie Mays, oh no, you lost out in something to Ken Griffey Jr. or Willie Mays, two of the greatest players of all time, so he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I don't care how bad the second half of his career was. It definitely did hurt his stock for me, but not enough to kill his campaign outright. I think there's a good chance he gets in, not this year, but the year after, depending on the jump he sees this year. Tom, like you said, he's a late bloomer, and he's at 58. If he can make that jump like 10%, maybe a smidge more, he gets in next year for sure. If it's a little less, he might have to wait a little longer. But at the rate he's going, I see him making it in. He's in his seventh year, so it's not quite panic time, but it could be if he doesn't gain traction soon. But either way, he's got my vote for sure. No offense, but I'm skipping over Victor Martinez. Good, but not great. One amazing campaign in 2014. Underrated for his career. Not a Hall of Famer. Sounds like a lot of the new guys on this list. Oh, God. And that leads me to one of the... I hate that I have to bring this guy in because I'm so on the fence about Joe Mauer. Tom, I'm not sure how you feel about him, but a lot of people seem to like Joe Mauer in this round of voting. He's on a lot of ballots so far. People love his hitting. People love his ability to remain consistent, even if his position on the field never remained consistent. I'm going to be honest, man. I think he's a fringe guy for me. I don't know how much I can credit him as an all-time great hitter in his time when, relative to his position, he was pedestrian. After he moved from catcher. I think this is a little more extreme from Andrew Jones's case, because the strike I'm holding against him is the exact same strike other people are holding against Andrew Jones, but there's a few things holding him back. Number one, Mauer's peak was insane. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it was as good as Andrew Jones's, though. He was a great hitter, one of the most gifted of his time. It didn't last quite as long as Andrew Jones's did, and the second half of his career just kind of kept going and going and going, and then he kept getting hurt. It just kind of kept snowballing for me. I really do want to vote for him. I want him to be just an easy one and done. He's in. But I don't know, man. It's tough for me. It's tough. It's not an outright no. He did put up 55 WAR, which is basically right at the cutoff where I consider a Hall of Famer to be. It's 60 and maybe a little bit below. That's it for me. He's a guy I'm going to circle back to and probably end up giving a vote to if I need a 10th guy, but for me, it's a maybe for now.
So here's the case for Joe Mauer. He's one of the best offensive catchers, I think, that I've ever seen. Quite frankly, you can argue of all time, because look, When he was catching, he won 3 batting titles as a catcher. An extremely rare feat to do, to win a batting title as a catcher. He won an MVP, which is something Andrew Jones doesn't have. He won 3 gold gloves in a row. I mean, dude finished his career with a .306 batting average, over 2,000 hits. To me, if he caught his full career, I think this would be a pretty easy case that he'd be an automatic yes for most people. And he also had 55 WAR, by the way, too. The problem with his career is that there's not a lot of postseason accumulation on the account that he was a Minnesota Twin. And, of course, the Minnesota Twins in the playoffs always correlate to massive failure, especially back in the day. But here's the big thing. After his age 30 season, he never caught another game in Major League Baseball. He was a DH and mainly a first baseman. That started the last 5 years of his career, from 31 to 35. That's really the crux of his career. Yes, he was a great catcher for 10 years, and he wasn't even a full-time catcher for all those 10 years, too. He really started splitting a catcher in 2011 when he was only 28 years old. But I'm going to count that he was a catcher because that's the position he played the most, obviously. So based on that stuff, you can make the case that he's not a Hall of Famer. He could be Hall of Very Good. However, to me, Joe Mauer is one of the quintessential catchers of his era. He was always this kind of straight-laced, really nice guy. Like, I don't think the character clause will hurt him at all. That stupid, stupid character clause. He also won 5 Silver Sluggers, by the way, to go along with his 3 batting titles, I should mention. Mauer is actually not a fringe guy on my ballot. I gave him an automatic yes. So I am putting Mauer through because I think he had a more complete career and definitive career than some of the other guys that are on the fringe for me. So he is, I can see completely why he's a fringe guy, but I'm putting him through because I think he's one of the more definitive yeses on this ballot, quite frankly. Moving on, we've got the always divisive on the ballot, Andy Pettitte. And this is really where we get one of those fringe guys to most people. Andy Pettitte has 60 career WAR. Great. 256 career wins. Fantastic. Almost 2,500 career strikeouts. Great. 3.85 WAR as a starter, or ERA as a starter. Oof. 3-time All-Star. Oof. He did win 5 World Series, though, and he won an ALCS MVP. And by the way, even though his starting numbers are kind of shaky because he accumulated a lot of wins with the Yankees, I will say he's one of the best postseason pitchers of all time. You cannot argue me on that one. To me, he is. He had 44 starts in the playoffs alone, 276 innings as a pitcher in the postseason. It's actually a comparable ERA, actually 381 in the postseason compared to his 385 ERA as a starter otherwise. But this also comes down to the steroid issue. And this is, I think, what really has hurt Pettitte more than anything, kind of being more of a more heralded Mark Burley for the New York Yankees is his steroid allegations, because he was on whatever the hell list it was back in the day. I think he even admitted to taking steroids at one point. But the thing that gets him over for me is he was never popped for steroids. So maybe you could say I'm a hypocrite for saying, yeah, he admitted he's cheating and I'm going to put him on the ballot anyway. But when it comes down to steroids, again, I already stated my case. Half the league used them. I think a lot of people got a pass for a while, and then they start cracking down on it once people got pissy at them and the government got involved. To me, Pettitte's a yes. Now, obviously, he's not going to get into Cooperstown unless it's through a ballot, like a special committee ballot. He's only gotten as high as 17% on the last ballot from last year. Otherwise, he's scored below 14% in every year past. So he's not going to be a guy that actually gets in the long run. But he's a yes for me.
Just to save on time, all I'll say is I voted for Pettitte last year, or I put him on my mock last year, basically only for the playoff results. Okay, not only that. If it was only his regular season output, I probably wouldn't even vote for him. 3.85 is pretty high for a starter. But the fact that he's arguably the best postseason pitcher of all time, or at least in the conversation, I think deserves to build up his campaign a little more than it would for other pitchers. Is he lucky to have that distinction compared to other pitchers? Yes. Is it fair? Maybe not entirely. Am I still going to use it in Pettitte's favor? Yes, it's there. Because it's not the crux of my argument, it's something that just helps it. Moreover, the steroid thing, Tom, I think you and I have discussed this in years past. We kind of have the same output in that if you were caught, suspended, and overall maligned for taking steroids, a la Manny Ramirez or Alex Rodriguez, you're not really on anyone's radar. Like, for someone like Andy Pettit, who used it, admitted it, apologized, and never did it again, I almost feel guilty holding that against him, because the guy clearly owned up to it and knew that he made a mistake and never did it again. So he's going to get my vote. There's someone later on down the line who took steroids who I'm going to have another excuse for voting for him in spite of the steroids, but we'll get to that when we get to that. So Pettit's on my ballot. Brandon Phillips, good but not great. Loved him as a player, but he's not a Hall of Famer. Hey, look, speak of the devil, Manny Ramirez. Great player. Just took way too many steroids for my liking and got caught a couple too many times. Very fun player. It's going to keep him out, though. I'm pretty sure, how many years does he have on the ballot now? This is his eighth year and he's at 33%. Yeah, he's not getting in. He seems like an affable enough guy, but it's not going to happen. And before I throw it back to you, Tom, I'm just going to say, just to get this out of the way and move it along, Jose Reyes, good, not great. Hall of very good.
Yeah, he's also got the domestic violence stuff on his resume, too, that being Jose Reyes. So that also wouldn't go. Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't go very well into the whole character clause BS kind of cap. Obviously, we're not going to tolerate that. But even then, he had way too many check marks to meet and benchmarks to meet for Cooperstown that he simply didn't meet. So he's an automatic no. And the same goes with me with Manny Ramirez for the automatic no. Next up, we've got both of the Rodriguezes, though, and you start with Alex. And again, if there was no steroids involved, you can argue he's a top 10 player of all time. The issue with Alex Rodriguez is he's also one of the most hated players of all time. And he's arguably one of the most hated guys in the baseball media of all time. So he doesn't have a lot going for him in terms of brownie points going on. Obviously, I could go through all the accolades, 14 All-Star appearances, 696 home runs, and blah, 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 blah. You've all heard the tall tales of Alex Rodriguez before. This is his third year on the ballot, and he's consistently batted around 35%. So he's got more of a chance than Manny Ramirez, and he's trying to make face with the media. Even though he's a hated media member, I think he's starting to become more friendly in the baseball community and trying to kind of fix that besmirched image that he set for himself in his playing career. Is he going to make Cooperstown? Probably not. Barry Bonds and Roger aren't going to ever make it. No shot in hell Alex Rodriguez is. He can do as many media appearances as he wants to. Sorry, man. It's not going to work out. You got popped, I think, twice he may have been suspended. I know at least one time it was a huge suspension. Definitely not going to be a Hall of Famer, though. He's not going to get our votes. Francisco Rodriguez, though, is an interesting tale. One of the best closers of all time, if you stopped counting after that 60... I think it was like, what was it? 65 win?
62. No,
not win, I'm sorry. 62 save season. If you stopped there, then yeah, he would be one of the greatest closers of all time, even in that short sample size. But after that happened, his career just started to slowly taper off year by year. I mean, he wasn't ever really atrocious throughout the rest of his career. I mean, there's certainly some seasons that are not good. His final season has a 7.82 ERA. Not good, Chief. And the 2.86 ERA is fine enough as a closer to get away with. He had 437 career saves, a six-time All-Star, two-time Rule Aids Relief Award winner for Reliever of the Year. He even won the 2002 World Series with the member of the Anaheim Angels at the time. He has some finishes in the top five for Cy Young, even an MVP vote for sixth place in the 2008 ballot for the MVP. Again, that was his 62 save season. I'm of the belief, and you're going to hear this again later down the line when we talk about one specific closer on this list, that closers need to be more easily adapted into Cooperstown. And you can argue Francisco Rodriguez's peaks and all that stuff maybe weren't all that long. Maybe he didn't have consistency throughout his career. He didn't stay with one team and become well-known like the Trevor Hoffmans and Mo Rivera's, the two bona fide closers that are in Cooperstown. But what Francisco Rodriguez does have is an all-around great career, maybe just not as many accolades as some of the closers do, just because it's such a high threshold for closers. But then again, Francisco Rodriguez is also fourth all-time on the all-time save list. Believe it or not, he is fourth all-time at 437 career saves. I put Francisco on the ballot last year. Again, I'm a huge supporter of relievers into the Hall of Fame, and I'm not going to stop that belief this year. Francisco Rodriguez is one of my automatic yeses. I'm carrying him over into this year.
That's interesting. I don't think he's going to be an automatic yes for me. I really do like the case for more relievers in the Hall of Fame. I know I voted for him last year, but he doesn't really seem like a guy to me I'd carry over. You know, he had his peaks and valleys. He's a guy like, whatchamacallit, like Torrey Hunter and Joe Mauer that I'm going to have to circle back to, if only because I might want to make room for other guys on the list. But I'm going to cross that bridge when I get to it. He's going to be a tentative maybe for me. Not a no, but not really a yes. I do really like his case, though. All right, let's keep this train moving. Jimmy Rollins, no for me, sorry. I really like him. He's definitely more of the stat accumulator type than Chase Utley. Over 2,000 hits and all that, a ton of runs. Played on those great Phillies teams. Heart and soul of a franchise. I just don't think he did enough, if that makes any sense. Hall of very good. A Phillies legend. He's going to get his number retired, and he's going to be in Phillies lore forever. But in that respect, I think he's in the same boat as someone like Matt Holliday. I definitely see the case for him. I just don't see a lot in him compared to the other guys on this ballot. If it was a weaker ballot, he might honestly have my vote. I'll say that. But the next guy on this list does have my vote, and that is the man who's on an island right now. The one who is at risk of falling off in his 10th year, Gary Sheffield. Now, I know what you're thinking. Tony, you just said if they got popped for steroids and they got suspended and they got reprimanded and they're known for steroids, they're not going to be on the ballot. Or they're not going to be on your mock ballot. What gives? Well, much like we did with Bonds and Clemens, Sheffield took steroids in the 90s when steroid use was heavily marketed, or not marketed, but heavily benefited off the league itself when it comes to popularity. That was not a cohesive sentence. Sue me, it's late. But steroids back then was not seen as a faux pas, it was seen as a tool to help popularize the game, with Sheffield being one of its proprietors. And long story short, if Bud Selig can get into the Hall of Fame, then Gary Sheffield's gotta be in. The guy had 500 home runs. He was never, I don't even know if he was officially suspended for PED use. He was just listed in the Mitchell Report. End of the day, if you aren't reprimanded by the league for it, what reason do I have to strike it against you? Like, the closest I came was Andy Pettit, and even then he was like a fringe guy for me. At first, the steroid use definitely hurt him, but the fact that he never did it again kind of sold it. Sheffield did it, but was never formally punished for it. And his impact on the game was good enough that I think it deserves a vote, so he's getting a check mark for me. Plus, it's his last year. I'll do it in solidarity, if anything else.
So, when it comes to Gary Sheffield, he's been on my mind for the past couple of years. He's accumulated accolades. I mean, he's a 9-time All-Star. He won a World Series with Jim Leland's Marlins. He's got 60 WAR, almost 2,700 hits. He's got the 500 home run threshold, an incredible slash line, 292, 393, 514, 140 OPS plus. He's finished in many MVP votes. He's got the Silver Sluggers and all that stuff. But like Tony said, it's his last year on the ballot. I voted for him in the past few years. I'm going to do it again here. His highest, like Tony said, was 55% last year. Will he ultimately jump over the hurdle this year? No. He's that Mitchell Report guy. He's one of the steroid guys. He's not going to get in, but I think he'll probably get up to maybe around 62-63%. That's just a rough estimate, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. Accumulation, yes. Is he necessarily a guy you think of that spits out Hall of Fame when you hear Gary Sheffield? No. His batting stance, absolutely. That's a first ballot. He's a great slugger. Yeah, Gary Sheffield, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Now, the last five here are all controversial in some way, shape, or form. I'm only saying James Shields is controversial, by the way.
First guy?
Because if there was a Hall of Fame for If there was a Hall of Fame for baseball trades, James Shields would be on it because he was in part of that Fernando Tatis Jr. trade that landed him in San Diego. And I also think James Shields, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was Matt Garza, but I want to say it was Shields, gave up that home run to Bartolo Colon. So I think he's technically Shields in the Hall of Fame because I think that baseballer, it was Shields. Something like that, I think, made it to the Hall of Fame. So technically, James Shields can say he's a baseball Hall of Famer in that regard. Never going to be a baseball Hall of Famer otherwise. Sorry about that, Chief. Chase Utley, though, is the next name that is up for discussion. Analytical Darling with about 65%, or not 65%, 65 war, somewhere along that ballpark. He's kind of like the new Jeff Kent on the ballot, although I feel like people like Chase Utley a little bit more. Maybe not necessarily. I think he may have been a little bit divisive and combative, but he also doesn't have fans across Major League Baseball in terms of fans necessarily, considering what he did to Ruben Tejada. That being said, we could throw that out the window because the character clause is bullshit anyway. Is Chase Utley a Hall of Famer? I don't know. He doesn't have all the accumulation of like a Scott Rolen when you look at the analytical darlings. He's maybe more of a comparable to like a Bobby Gritch, where he's got a high amount of war. He's got some good slugging numbers. I think he was a better hitter than Bobby Gritch throughout his entire career. But the second half of his career tapered off, much like Todd Helton, although Todd Helton's got better numbers to back himself up. Chase Utley had great years in the beginning of his career. He's a fringe guy for me, and honestly, he's a guy that I will tell you yes or no at the end of these names, because he's really on the fence for me. Will he eventually get in? I really don't know, because of how analytics are playing into all these Hall of Fame decisions, but he'll be on the ballot, I'm assuming, for all 10 years, if he makes it that long, but for right now, he's a fringe guy for me.
See, I want to say the same, but I'm realizing right now that I'm giving so many guys the fringe moniker. And Utley, of the three we talked about at the beginning of this segment, Maurer, Utley, and Wright, I'm honestly most willing to consider Utley for the Hall of Fame, kind of a spoiler for how I'm viewing David Wright, but Chase Utley was just kind of a guy who did everything, much like Jimmy Rollins, heart and soul of the city. Philly loved him. I don't know about your divisive comment, though, Tom. We got Mets fans listening on the show. They probably turned off the second you said that. Like, oh, people probably like Chase Utley more. Not around here. They don't.
You're right. You're not wrong.
But that notwithstanding, he was still a great player. If he got 2,000 hits, man, he would be like a one and done for me. Like, I think he would definitely deserve to be in. I think the Jeff Kent comparison is very, very fair. He's very along the lines of Jeff Kent in terms of how his career went and how his numbers stacked up. He's like a slightly nerfed Scott Rolen. For that reason, I want to say he belongs in there, but I also don't want to keep lowering the bar, you know? But I'm going to be honest, I'm just going to use the same clause I use for Andy Pettit. Utley's a fringe guy, but he was great in the playoffs when he needed to be. So I'm going to give Utley a yes. This may make me turn around and give guys like Joe Maurer and Torii Hunter a yes, but we'll get to that when we get to the end. I'm going to give Utley a yes. He's a Hall of Famer, not the greatest ever, but for his time period and for what a second baseman was expected to do, I know I'm cherry picking, but 259 homers as a second baseman is something really special. So I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Bare minimum, I'm going to give him my vote. I've got 10. Might as well use him. Speaking of use him, here's someone I'm really not going to use him on. That's Omar Vizquel. The not-so-nice allegations about him notwithstanding, he is a defense specialist. One of the better defensive infielders of all time at the risk of his hitting prowess. He's basically Ozzie Smith without the postseason pedigree and a couple ticks down the peg when it comes to defense. Which, granted, that's not saying much. That's like comparing, you know, a cheeseburger with ketchup to a cheeseburger without ketchup. Both are good, but one is clearly better than the other. So,
Hang on. Which one are you saying is better right now? Ketchup. The cheeseburger with ketchup or without ketchup?
With. Oh, no.
Okay.
No, don't tell me you're not a ketchup guy.
I'm not against ketchup on a burger. The place in New Haven is Louie's Lunch or whatever the hell, the inventor of the burger. They are. But if I have the choice between a tomato or ketchup, I think I'm taking the tomato. I'm a big boy. I'm going to go for the real food, not the sauce. ketchup more than tomatoes, but I'm going with a tomato on my burger if I'm given the choice between tomato or ketchup. I am old enough to say I can do that. I'm not a kid anymore, Tony. I only drink chocolate milk occasionally. I'm going to put a tomato on my burger instead of ketchup.
I didn't know it was a maturity thing. I don't really like raw tomatoes. I don't know if that's a thing. If it's like an Italian thing. I like it in sauce. I like it as a marinade. Sue me, I guess. Okay, here's the ultimatum. Do you like ketchup? Just in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do like ketchup. I really don't have a problem with it. I'm playing this up, but I've just succumbed to be the guy who puts a tomato on this burger instead of ketchup. Now, for whatever reason, that's a thing that's like, I don't know why it's triggering me so much, but I feel like if I'm going to try and be more mature for whatever reason, that's one of the things that makes me more mature, is putting a tomato on my burger instead of ketchup.
I'm calling you that in the outro now. I'm Tony Puglisi, and this is the guy who puts tomato on his burger. Talk to you guys next time. Speaking of anything. Back on topic. I'm not voting for Omar Vizquel.
Yes, please.
He was a fringe guy a while ago for me, before the allegations came out. Then the allegations came out, and then it just kind of got awkward. I know I said I don't like to use the character clause to break folks down, but for a guy like Omar, I don't think it's fully because of the character clause. It's because he couldn't really hit. The defense definitely gets him up there for me, but I don't think it's enough to win me a vote. Honestly, Tom, I'm just going to blaze through the next two guys just so we can get to the end. Billy Wagner was a guy who was on both of our ballots last year, and shocker of shockers, he's on it again this year. Tom, you mentioned the need for more relievers in the Hall of Fame when it came to K-Rod. I'm putting that card down tenfold with Billy Wagner, one of the best relievers of all time, probably the best left-handed reliever of all time. Bare minimum, he's up there. Career ERA of 2.31, that's a 1.87 ERA plus, 422 saves, which compared to K-Rod, it's not as much, but also not by a lot. K-Rod had 437. You're getting a better overall pitcher in Billy Wagner with, albeit, a shaky playoff resume, but to me, playoff stuff is like the character clause. I only like to do it to build players like Andy Pettitte and Chase Utley up, not break players like Billy Wagner down just because, you know, a couple balls didn't fall his way in the postseason. He's still one of the best regular season relievers ever. He absolutely deserves a spot in the Hall of Fame. One of the most insane peaks for a reliever ever. Not much else needs to be said. He's great. And lastly for me is David Wright. Tom, this one hurts me, but I don't think I could put him in. I'm just going to shoot straight here. I love David Wright as a player. Do not get me wrong. As a Yankees fan growing up, he was like one of very, very few players on the Mets who I loved watching. Even though he was a rival, an in-state rival, he was just an affable guy. He was Captain America. He put up great numbers year in and year out. Silver sluggers, gold gloves, you know, highlight reel plays. Probably should have had an MVP at some point, but for Joe Mauer, I'm willing to overlook the lessened time at catcher by the mantra that he still did play well over 1,800 games, almost hit 1,900. With David Wright, man, you're not even looking at 1,600. He's at 1,585, and a bunch of his counting stats took a hit as a result. Actually, still had pretty similar home run numbers to Chase Utley, which is really impressive. But end of the day, man, I just don't think he was around long enough to justify it. He had 49 war. If he played like three more years, I would 100% say he belongs in the Hall of Fame. At the rate he was going, he definitely would have made it. I just don't think he was around long enough to fully push the envelope, you know? Who knows? If I end up with that 10th vote, I might give it to him just because I really like super subjective, I know, but I really like him. He had great rate stats. And he was, again, face of a franchise. Mets fans love the guy. But for what he did on the field and only looking at that, he just didn't do as much as the other guys. I'm sorry, it's sad but true.
The Yankees had their Jeter. The Mets had their David Wright. That's the best way to put it. Unfortunately, one of those careers is not like the other, and one of those careers, unfortunately, has to be David Wright's. If he was never hurt, or he just had five more years of being that elite prime marketable star in Major League Baseball that shined for the New York Mets, maybe even got them to the postseason a couple more times. Automatic, yes. I think we can both agree that with that. And quite frankly, he would be well on his way to Cooperstown. But with the injuries, he wasn't able to accumulate not nearly as much as some of the other guys throughout baseball history. And if you're comparing apples and oranges, I'm just comparing Chase Utley and David Wright, really, because these are the final two that I'm voting on for that yes or no. To recap, I am going to put Bobby Abreu through, just because I think he honestly probably had more of a complete career than the two of them, arguably. And I put him through last year, so I don't really have a reason to not put him through this year. So it comes down to Utley and Wright for me, and honestly, I don't want to agree with you because you're you, but also, logically, Yeah, sorry I took a shot at you there.
I'm used to it.
Logically, though, yeah, good. Keep being used to it. Logically, though, Utley has a much easier hill to climb in terms of where he stacks because of the position he played. David Wright does not have that type of leniency in terms of that he played third base. And it's hard to make the Hall of Fame, no doubt, no matter what. But Utley's got the analytics on his side. He's got the shallow offensive numbers of second baseman. Wright has to stack up to the Mike Schmidts of the world, to other guys like Adrian Beltre and blah, 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 blah. Slash line is absolutely fantastic if you compare the two of them together, Wright and Utley. In fact, Wright does have a better slash line. He's got a better batting average, OBP, slugging, OPS, OPS plus. He has one more All-Star appearance, and he's got two gold gloves that Chase Utley never won. Chase Utley has two more silver sluggers than David Wright at four, one less All-Star appearance, and he won a championship. What Chase Utley has is more of a complete career in terms of games, more hits, more home runs, more RBIs, and a WAR that's about 15 points higher. So again, based on the hill to climb and how things shaked up in the playoffs and whatnot, I hate to do it because I absolutely love David Wright, and he's beloved and revered throughout baseball and still is to this day. David Wright is not going to be getting my vote this year. If there's a weaker ballot in the future, I'd be more than happy to say yes to David Wright. But because of that incomplete career and the so much I has to climb to try and make the Hall of Fame as a third baseman, if I'm thinking about logistically, Chase Utley just has the better Hall of Fame case based on where he played. It comes down to that. If Chase Utley were a third baseman, I don't know if I'd be having the exact same argument. You could, but I think you could honestly make the case for Wright a little bit more based on their peaks and their numbers and whatnot. But I'm going Utley. No, right. I'm sad that I have to do that, but that's just the way it is. To go through my ballot this year, I am voting for the 10 names: Bobby Abreu, Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, Andrew Jones, Joe Mauer, Andy Pettit, Francisco Rodriguez, Gary Sheffield, Billy Wagner, and Chase Utley. Honorable mention to David Wright. He was the guy who just had to be left out. That's just the way it is. Maybe next year.
That's the sad reality of it. But the good news is I feel like some of these names, like David Wright, are big enough to appear on the ballot again. So, hey, there's not going to be an Adrian Beltre next year. I imagine he's got to get in. That's one extra vote we'll both be able to use. Speaking of which, I'm going to fill out the rest of my ballot right now. I think I'm only outstanding about a vote or two, because I did walk it back. I am going to put Bobby Abreu in. I said he was a maybe, but I've loved him since we started the show. I'm not going to go back on him now. So Abreu, Beltre, Helton for me as well, Andrew Jones, Andy Pettit, Gary Sheffield, Chase Utley, and Billy Wagner. Okay, so I have two votes to play with. I'm going to throw some darts at the board for the sake of time and for the sake of being different from you. I might pass on Joe Mauer this year. That's not because I don't think he can be a Hall of Famer, because I think he is going to be on the ballot next year. I'll have a chance to vote for him again, and I'm just going to be completely transparent. For the sake of content, I don't want our ballots to be exactly the same after a hour of deliberation, just truth sliding on his seat. I feel like that'd be a bit of a cop-out if, like, oh man, we agreed the entire time after all this discourse. So, for that reason, I'm going to give a vote to Torii Hunter. I feel like he could definitely use a little bit more love, and he is a really good all-around player who has gotten some love for the Hall of Fame. Is he going to get in? No, but I do kind of want him to stick around a little bit for next year to see if there's a weaker ballot, and that's where the strategy comes into it, you know? He may not be a Hall of Famer in my book, but I at least want him to stay around, and I have more confidence in Mauer not needing my vote than Torii Hunter not needing my vote. So I'm going to go Hunter for my 9th vote, and for my 10th, I really do like K-Rod. Damn it. I honestly, should I just give my vote to David Wright? Just to be really different. After I gave the whole spiel about how he doesn't have enough games for me. I mean, it was really impressive.
How about this?
How about what?
How about this for the sake of differentiation? I completely throw out my credibility and I swap Chase Utley and David Wright, and I put David Wright on my ballot so that way we can continue to be different from each other. And I can say my argument that I just made for the past 5 minutes is completely invalid. I hate Chase Utley. He sucks for ruining Robin Tejada's once promising career. I hate that guy. Character clause this, character clause that, injury this, injury that. I'll vote David Wright instead of Chase Utley. And then you get to put whatever you want to make it more different. Do you want that to happen?
That doesn't change anything, though, because I'm still voting for Chase Utley, and that third vote now has to go to someone else in order to be different. It can't be David Wright anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, then, you know what? I don't care. I don't want David Wright on my ballot, then. I'm trying to help you out, man.
You're actively making the situation worse, though. You're making it more likely I'll have to vote for Titan of the Game. I can't even think of a funny name in time. There you go, Brandon Phillips. I'll vote for Brandon Phillips. No, I'm kidding. That'd be the ultimate cop-out. I'll give it to David Wright. You know what? Why not? I just built up how much he doesn't need, or he needs more games for me to really consider him. But at the end of the day, he did have a really great career, and I do think he deserves more of a look on the ballot. Again, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but for the rate basis that he had throughout his career, it's beyond respectable. He put up some really good numbers in spite of his injuries, and his slash line does look really pretty. 296, 376, 491. That's actually a much higher slugging than I thought he had. Still doesn't quite fit the cut for me when it comes to sheer volume. He had 14 years, but hey, he made the most of those 14 years. So my 10th vote will go to David Wright, completely going against what I said. But for the sake of differentiating myself from Tom, that's the way the cookie will crumble. And that is our Hall of Fame mock ballots. Again, we are not certified voters. These aren't going to count for anything. These are just how we would vote if we were voters. If we were to guess who's going to get in, I'm just going to shoot the shot for both of us. I think it's going to be Helton and Wagner. I think they've got the biggest case. They are the closest to the top, and they are both very, very much within reach. Tom? It's been a fun episode. We talked about some very laughable trades. We talked about some laughable trade proposals, and we talked about the Hall of Fame. I think that's about a good place to call it this time around. Have you got anything else to serenade our, what did you call them, lazy? Our lazy listeners before we close this out?
Well, you dirty baseball fanatics, I really don't have anything much else to add because the hot stove is really too cold and young to really give you a proper send-off. So I guess I will end by giving my Hall of Fame predictions of who will actually get in this year, and I'm not going to include Helton's name. I think he got 72% of the vote. God damn it.
Yeah, he did.
Oh. Yeah, I guess we are going to be the exact same then. I'm a completely boring person then. It's going to be Beltre, it's going to be Helton, and it's going to be Wagner this year. Andrew Jones will get... Yeah, you forgot about Beltre. I'm putting him out there. I'm saving your ass. How about that?
Yeah, no, he's the only newcomer getting in. At least first try. That's
the only surefire Hall of Famer on the ballot, and you completely forgot him.
Yeah, that's me being tired and stupid. Mostly tired, but the argument can be made it's mostly stupid.
Yeah, I would argue that. That's where we're going to differentiate. I do believe it's because you're mostly stupid.
You argue Chase Utley to yourself. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening to episode 81 of the Diamond Duo Podcast. Please feel free to go follow us on social media at Diamond Duo Pod on Twitter, the Diamond Duo Podcast on Instagram, and leave us a 5-star review wherever you find your podcast. For the guy who likes to put tomatoes on his burgers, I'm Tony Puglisi, saying so long, see you in a few weeks, where we will talk about hopefully some more moves when the stove indeed becomes hot. Talk to you next time, folks. Take it easy.